Welcome to the Troubleshooters Podcast with me, your host, Mike McGrath. My guest today is a remarkable entrepreneur. I've worked with him for about 3 years and I can tell you he is the real deal. For me, he epitomizes the entrepreneurial necessity to hustle and then combines that with the smarts to anticipate and pick opportunities at the right time like nobody else I know. And if that isn't enough, he works tirelessly to improve our carbon footprint. His company has helped reduce CO2 emissions by over 60 million carbon tons and counting, and he's not done yet. So sit back and enjoy our conversation. Stuart Edgley, welcome to the Troubleshooters Podcast.
That's a hell of an intro, Mike. Thanks very much for that.
It's a pleasure, and it's true as well. So you've been in business now for over 15 years, right? So you must have done your fair share of troubleshooting throughout that time.
Mate, we have. Yeah, the business was incorporated back in 2007, and from a troubleshooting perspective, we're certainly right in the middle of it. These energy efficiency programs and energy efficiency around the country is an absolute moving feast.
Yes.
So, you know, staying close and nimble to the schemes and to the market's been absolutely critical.
Yeah. So look, before I get you to tell us a bit about Emerald Planet, which is a fascinating story. So how are you managing with lockdown at the moment? I mean, there's a troubleshooting task if ever there was one.
Oh, mate, at the moment, we've been pretty fortunate, to be honest. Mm. There's been plenty of opportunities that have come out of COVID and lockdown. And I think the fortunate part for us is the fact that we're a national company and we've been very lucky that lockdowns where we thought they were going to impact our ability to service our customers actually went the other way and has supported our opportunities. And we've been fortunate the fact that the state-based lockdowns have not run in parallel.
Mm.
So where one state has shut down, the other one has been thriving. So we've been fortunate.
There's definitely been winners and losers in this pandemic in terms of businesses. You know, call it dumb luck, call it whatever you want. But anyone in hospitality or leisure or travel, I mean, look at the airlines. I mean, they've just been in a world of pain. And then I look at the other side of the coin. You look at mining, you look at parts of manufacturing, you look at food, it's kind of flying. And you fall into that basket, Stuart, Emerald Planet, don't you? You've done really well through this. You've been able to go online, you've been nimble, your guys have gone to work from home.
Well, I think the fact that we've been nimble has been critical, Mike, and our business has been set up that way. You know, for our organization, it's as simple as picking up your laptop, grabbing a couple of screens from work and heading home. And that's certainly been challenging and mentally challenging for our team. You know, working from home, as most people would know, is not easy over the long term. But the business was set up to be able to do that. We, you know, when COVID hit, what was it, the best part of 18 months ago, we made sure that our business was nimble enough to be able to, you know, we moved everything into the cloud. We reviewed all of our operations and made sure that, you know, the facade of our business would be business as usual to our customers, whether we're in the office or at home.
So, Stuart, tell us a bit about Emerald Planet. You know, what are you doing there?
Emerald Planet's a manufacturer of energy efficient products.
Mm.
We came out of the energy efficiency markets nationally. You know, the New South Wales energy efficiency scheme started up under what was called the GGAS scheme back in 2006. And we identified an opportunity then to supply services into the energy efficiency and carbon abatement markets.
So, Stu, how did you do that? So, we're back in sort of 2006-07. What are you doing at that point before you start?
Yeah, sometimes you pitch yourself, Mike, and you wonder how you got to where you got. You know, one thing's for sure, where you start ain't where you finish.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
Mate, back in the day, I was running a hospitality company. I'm a chef by trade. I was providing services into a company called Ramsay Healthcare, where we ran all their commercial kitchens. So my business was running commercial kitchens into Ramsay Healthcare's operations and hospitals and clinics and things.
Was that your own business, Stuart?
Yeah.
When did you start that? I mean, you obviously trained as a chef, right?
Yeah.
And so when did you kick off by yourself?
We kicked off back in about 2002 in that business. And I had an intimate relationship with Ramsay Healthcare at the time. Yeah, my background was restaurants and cafes and things. And then we moved into commercializing that and providing services into these organizations. And Ramsay Healthcare were the largest. So I used to service all of his commercial kitchens. And we built up brigades of catering teams really to service. And I think that gave me some real business understanding, the ability to be able to grow teams and operations. And then a friend of mine came along in around about 2006 and introduced me to the carbon abatement schemes and, you know, told me the philosophy around providing services and products into commercial and residential markets. You know, example would be lighting, which was a core business. Yeah, upgrading inefficient lighting into efficient lighting and then reducing energy. And as a byproduct of reducing energy, we can reduce carbon emissions. And a byproduct of reducing carbon emissions is that there is a carbon trading scheme. So as long as it's measurable, carbon credits can be created and they can be traded, which offsets the cost of, you know, servicing a customer. So we can go into a home and basically take out your old inefficient lighting, replace it with efficient lighting, create carbon credits, and the cost of those carbon credits can often pay for the whole service. So he identified that opportunity and came to me and said, listen, I'm looking for somebody who understands how to run teams and how to run servicing. And that gave us this leap out of hospitality and into the energy efficiency markets. And it wasn't long until we realized that, you know, there was serious growth in this opportunity.
But that was a huge jump, Stu. So you had a successful catering business, right? You were clearly a hustler. You can get things done. And so someone pitches you this idea. That's a hell of a leap.
Oh, it was huge.
So you just looked at it and thought, I like the look of this. This is better. What made you jump?
It wasn't that different, Mike. It was a different industry.
Okay. Isn't that interesting?
I think most people in business can relate to this. It wasn't that different. At the end of the day, it was human resources, it was understanding the business opportunity, running the numbers, understanding the risks, and then taking the leap. So, you know, moving out of hospitality and running services like we did, there's a lot of risk involved in that. Moving across into servicing the energy efficiency industry, it wasn't that big a leap. And the opportunity there was, you know, these energy efficiency schemes were legislated for years. The opportunity was real. I think a funny story, Mike, was the first step for me was actually we decided to do a pilot and we went to the Royal Easter Show and we looked at essentially giving away energy efficient light globes at the Royal Easter Show. And on the back of that, we would create carbon credits, which meant that we could actually give these products away. We kind of ran the numbers and we said, how many of these things are we going to give away? We looked at it and thought, oh, you know, it's 5, 10, 15,000. And by the time we ran the numbers and went Excel spreadsheet crazy, we thought we'd give away the best part of 50,000 packs of light globes, which were, there were six light globes in a pack. So we had the best part of 300,000 light globes. And we needed to secure 300,000 light globes in about 4 weeks to take to the show. So we basically raked the whole market. We raked through every manufacturer we could, every major lighting manufacturer, and sourced every single product we possibly could. Went into the Royal Easter Show, took up two stalls and gave the light globes away under the banner of the New South Wales Energy Efficiency Scheme for 2 weeks. We gave away 49,500 show bags. So we were 500 show bags off.
Wow.
And that was a, you know, a ball dropping moment. You know, that the penny dropped and I went, wow, this opportunity is very real. It's not hard to give things away. But, you know, running the back end operations was still a major project and took a lot of work. But understanding that bringing high quality technology to a market and complementing it with government supported energy efficiency, carbon credits was a real market opportunity. So we launched and took a big deep dive into it.
Great.
I basically walked away from my catering business to take that on.
Great. Isn't that amazing? So it was a sort of penny dropping moment for you. You went, okay, there's something going on here. And did you like the idea of, you know, the greater good? Did you like the idea that actually, look, we're going to be doing some good here. We're actually going to be, you know, producing much more efficient product?
Mate, I love both sides of it. I mean, obviously the commercial opportunities are great.
Yeah.
But then knowing that you're doing something good, that you're reducing carbon emissions, you're supporting the environment, and being in a really progressive industry really was exciting. It is a feel-good, and that's reflected by our team and our staff and the people that we recruit in the business. I think most people in this business have the same philosophy. They come into the business knowing that we're an energy efficiency company, manufacturing products that make a difference. You know, and our customers feel the same way. You know, our customers have a similar philosophy. Everyone, of course, is out there to make money, and it needs to be commercially smart.
Viable, yeah.
But what we're all doing is good, and it's supported by government, supported by private enterprise, and the outcomes have been very, very positive.
Yes. I mean, I've only known you now, Stu, for about 3 years, right? And we sort of teamed up a little bit, at least I have in a non-exec capacity. But one of the things that I've observed is that this has been 15 years in the making. The last 2 or 3 years have seen phenomenal growth for you, and you've got further growth planned. But this was a long time earning your stripes in this market, wasn't it? You know, you were 12 years or so just building slowly but surely, progressively, year on year, some years better, some years not so good. And I think we can forget that sometimes. You look at you now and you're flying and you're going, well, hold on a minute. This is not an overnight success, is it?
No, it hasn't been an overnight success, Mike. It's been full of risk, to be honest. And I think the nature of myself and the business has been to take risks. You know, these energy efficiency markets are really governed by some very sensitive government policies. They're also the risks associated around carbon trading, carbon prices, compliance are really, really challenging. And what we've seen over the years in these markets that one or two opportunities fly, and when they really fly, they fly. You know, when the party's on, it's on hard. And so being able to build, manage that risk has been really, really challenging, but also understanding that along the way, at any particular time, any one of a number of factors can change just subtly and move the whole business significantly. And, you know, the risks associated with that are enormously high. And I think over the years, Mike, we've learned how to manage that better.
Yes.
We've recruited well. We've got a very, very strong team that understands the industry better than most. So we can now navigate our risks a lot better. And we've opened up to a national market. So we're de-risking our business through national opportunities and then de-risking our business through a much wider range of products, and puts us into a position now where we're not so sensitive to one or two markets.
Yeah.
I think the other thing, Mike, is there's nothing like time in the chair.
Yeah.
If you can provide a good quality service and your customers trust you, I think trust is big. You'll want to work with people you can trust. And we've proven to be a trusted company. You know, we get in the trenches with some of our customers. A lot of our customers have had challenges. We've had our own challenges, and our customers have supported us through it. And,
yes,
yeah, time in the chair gives you credibility and creates reputation. And we're fortunate now that we're in a position that, you know, after whatever it is, the best part of 13, 14 years, that we've become a name that's recognized in the industry, and we're not chasing the work like we used to. We're in a position where customers are coming to us as a recognized brand, which is really flattering and satisfying.
I think that, I mean, just putting that risk into context for listeners, right? So we're talking about one of the risks is the risk of government changing legislation, and you're having to anticipate, you know, how you're going to interpret that legislation in product. And then you've got a long buying cycle, you've got to stock up for that. And that's where I've seen some risk in your business, but I've seen you get increasingly sophisticated at thinking about, okay, how are you going to manage that? And you talk about time in the chair. There's an instinctual element to that as well, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I think we work very closely with government. We sit on most of the energy efficiency steering committees, which helps us. But it doesn't take away from the fact that at the end of the day, we're a manufacturer now. You know, we went from being a servicing customer company to a manufacturer on the back of the fact that when we were servicing, providing lighting upgrades and energy efficiency upgrades, we identified the fact that actually from a product perspective, there was no one servicing that industry. None of the manufacturers really understood how to service the industry. You know, manufacturers would traditionally manufacture a product, bring it in and sell it through a traditional wholesale market. We sell direct to the customers and direct to the largest customers. With these energy efficiency schemes, you know, we've now had the best part of 15 years and the industry's built, and servicing the energy efficiency markets now is a real industry. And we identified the fact that there was really nobody servicing this industry well. And not just servicing it with product for the sake of product, servicing it with product that understood legislation, understood exactly what the customer required, that's the customer being the end user, and then understanding exactly how the installation companies and the servicing companies exactly how they wanted the product, how they wanted it packaged, and how they wanted to install the product. So really taking that deep dive into this industry was critical and has put us in a now a really strong position. And we're still now finding that this market is probably a little underdeveloped.
Yeah.
You know, the traditional markets are still selling through the wholesalers.
Yes.
Direct-to-market model is relatively new in our space, and we're enjoying it.
Yes. And Stu, just, you know, by way of context, you're probably number one here in this niche, aren't you, in this abatement space?
We've got a lot of competitors in this space that will supply one or two or three products. I think we'd be recognized in the market as the company that has a holistic offering.
Yeah.
You can come to us for energy efficient products across, you know, lighting, hot water systems, and we're, you know, energy management systems. And essentially, we look into the energy efficiency markets and understand what products are required. We go away and we manufacture those products, and we basically create a best of breed product, manufacture it in large volume, sell it at very aggressive pricing to support our customers in supplying a product to the lowest possible point to their customer. You extrapolate that out, it turns into high volume. And that little niche market, we would be recognized in the market as a little bit of a one-stop shop. You can pretty much get anything you want from us to be able to service that industry.
Yes.
Most of our competitors may have one or two or three products, and they specialize in that, and they'll push that particular product in the market, where we're a little bit like the Woolworths of the Coles.
Yeah. Look, when we met a few years ago, you were talking to me a little bit about the future and how you saw things, and there were a couple of things struck me. One was you saw an opportunity perhaps in Queensland to get out of the direct abatement market. And the other one was, we were talking to me about technology and how important technology was, and continuing to invest in technology, and how you saw a need to future-proof. Tell us a little bit about how those things have, because I think it's really exciting what you're doing in that area, and I think it's got great lessons for other business owners.
Yeah, well, those two opportunities were really different opportunities, Mike. I mean, the core of our business is to supply the highest possible quality product, really focusing on energy efficiency. So we've got a great team in China. Most of our products are manufactured out of China, but they're all designed in Australia for the Australian market and conditions. And we've had a track record of producing high volume products. And that core methodology within our business of producing high volume, high quality into those energy efficiency schemes set us up, and it set us up for success. 3 years ago, we identified an opportunity in Queensland where the Queensland government had legislated that they were going to move away from old traditional smoke alarms into a more modern style smoke alarm, which is an ionisation smoke alarm. And that retrofit and rollout program was really part of our core skills, and that is to understand that market, understand what the product would be required for that market. We created a board or a steering committee of electricians and engineers, and we designed a brand new product for that market that would complement the market at an aggressive price point.
Yes.
We had a launch 2 years ago that went relatively well. We learned a lot from that. We didn't have quite the right product. We did a redesign and launched that again in, it was last November, and we've hit that market now aggressively. I think we're currently representing about 70% of the whole market, which is a real success and a real de-risker for us, Mike. It's a product that's outside of the energy efficiency schemes, but still sits well within our core skills.
Stu, let's put that in context, right? You've launched a product, I think it was February this year.
Yeah.
And you've probably captured 70% of the market already.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a phenomenal effort. I mean, I know you've been thinking about it for a while. You did a soft launch a couple of years ago. I know we had a look at size in the market when we did some strategy work with you, and we liked the look of it. But actually, getting to this point, that's a phenomenal effort, really. And you've done it through a superior product and a better price. That's the formula, right?
Yeah, not just the formula, Mike. I think going back to knowing your customer, working very, very closely with your customer, like having a real intimate relationship with your customer and understanding exactly what their needs are. So here at Emerald, we've got a very strong logistical team and a very strong sales team that complements a strong product. So we take a deep dive into our customers, and that has been really critical. But the product, at the end of the day, if the product doesn't work, the product doesn't work and customers won't go with you. So pricing is critical. We're looking to sell, you know, the BMW at a Toyota price point.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will raise their eyebrows at that when we hit the market, and they kind of go, oh, you know, this can't be good. And then you're
too good to be true, yeah.
And your customer has a second look, and then they have a third look, and then they go, oh, hang on a minute, this is quite good. And what we've done, I suppose, Mike, on the back of the fact that we've got a young, nimble team, and we've got very strong R&D, we've now complemented that with, you know, introducing over the last 12 months, bringing all of our products together under an energy management system and really introducing IoT to our business.
Yes.
You know, bringing everything together now. So all of our lighting is coming together through an energy management system, and The smoke alarms are coming together under an energy management system, so you can kind of test your smoke alarms and you can silence your smoke alarms and hush them. And you can do a whole lot of things now through technology that we couldn't, well, certainly Emerald Planet couldn't do a few years ago. And that's now, I think, shaking the market up a little bit, that saying to those traditional markets that, you know, innovation is critical and customer experience is critical. And that's being certainly taken up by our customers.
Yeah. And just talk a bit about that energy management system and that technology and how you're about to launch into homes to really put people in control of the data around their usage on a real-time basis.
Yeah, that's right, Mike. The energy management system essentially sits inside you in your phone through our app. But, you know, one of the leading products and one of the launch products that we're using to complement the energy management system is an energy monitor called the Energy Advisor. Or electricity advisor, sorry. And that's just a product that goes into your energy meter that can be installed by a handyman, any person really, not a complicated installation at all. And it allows you to just understand from a higher level what your energy consumption is. It's there to change behaviors. Essentially, you can look at when you're using your power, whether it's in high tariff times or low tariff times. You can set yourself alerts and notifications. You can set yourself goals and targets, and it can just prompt you and your family to make changes. So, you know, the electricity advisor can be installed into the home and it can be shared with the whole family, so everybody has an understanding of where the electricity is being used. And that really is the first step now for us, Mike, into the Internet of Things, into a direct engagement with our customers, and then will launch us into a whole range of new products that will allow our customers to basically empower themselves to be able to manage their energy consumption within the home.
Now, I think that's a phenomenal initiative. And I mean, again, as you did with the alarms, you know, you're set to significantly capture market share again here, aren't you? Because the way you're approaching the market.
Well, what we've seen, Mike, is from a competitive perspective, you know, you can install your solar and you can monitor your solar and you can install a smart lighting system. You can add a whole lot of independent technologies to your home and you can run them independently. What we haven't seen really is somebody who has launched an energy management system into the home that can control all your electrical devices.
Mm.
And that is your higher level electrical devices. You know, ultimately, our ultimate goal, and we're not there yet, is to be able to, you know, monitor your solar and then control your hot water systems, control your pool pump, control your lighting, control your air conditioning. Bring it all together under one app and basically be in a position to be able to control your energy consumption through that one app, whether it be through defaults or whether it be through a possible third party or whether it be through the individual themselves being able to just monitor and check. An example would be, Mike, to have the consumer be in a position where if they've got a solar PV unit on their roof and they're creating power, they can ultimately decide where they want to use that power. If you're creating energy, you can direct it back into the grid, which isn't the best. You could direct it into a battery. You could direct it back into a hot water system to heat your hot water, or you could direct that power into your pool, ultimately reducing the consumer's energy consumption.
Yeah, look, that's phenomenal because, you really grabbed that Internet of Things, the power of the internet here. You're grabbing it, pulling it together in a way that puts people in control, right? And I think that's really the power of this initiative, really, isn't it? Is to put the consumer in control, probably for the first time, of how he's using his energy and how he could perhaps use it more intelligently and cost effectively.
It's a natural step forward. I mean, yeah, you're seeing now everybody sits on their phone, right? Everybody wants to be able to control things. All information's coming through the phone. So to be able to control your energy consumption now through your phone is an obvious next step for us. You know, for us, it's really complementing what we're doing already. We're already creating products to be able to service the residential, commercial, and industry from an energy efficiency perspective through product. But now to be able to bring them together under one umbrella through an energy management system is a natural step. It's a really exciting time for us in the next 12 months.
Just by way of further context, you're talking about a business here that's doubled in the last 12 months, even in spite of COVID. You're talking about a business that could double again, if not more, in the next 12. How are you managing that? You know, we talk about growing pains, right, when a company's expanding like this. What are the lessons that you might want to share with other owners around growth?
One thing's for sure. I know I'm not the smartest guy in the room, I like to surround myself with smart people. We've got a very, very good team here. So I've surrounded myself with really strong expertise that have similar mindsets, I think, to myself.
Yeah.
And similar philosophies to myself. So the business is very, very fortunate that we've been in a position to be able to surround ourselves with very, very good people.
Yes.
And also knowing, Mike, that every day there's a new opportunity. So we don't get too caught up in trying to protect ourselves, and we don't enter markets conservatively. We enter markets relatively aggressively, knowing that, you know what, if we make a mistake today, we can fix it tomorrow.
Yeah.
If we should have turned left, but we turned right, well, then we can turn around.
Yes, yes. I mean, I've been struck by that. It's an opportunity mindset, really. I remember years ago, I mean, it was a long time ago, showing my age really, but I remember Bill Gates being interviewed. And the interviewer said to him, yeah, so Bill, how did you do it? I think he'd just become the richest bloke in the world at the time. Mm. And anyway, Gates just gave some fluffy answer about, you know, good people and blah. And the interviewer said, no, how did you really do it? And then he dropped his head and he thought for a few seconds. And then he picked his head up again. He said, we took massive action.
Yeah.
That was it. He just said, we just took action. And you remind me of that as approach. You take action. You say you enter markets aggressively. You do the thinking and then you take huge action, Stuart. You think big in terms of volume. You know, but most of the manufacturers in the lighting game who are working through wholesalers and distributors and retailers, they're thinking in terms of dozens and hundreds. You think in terms of hundreds of thousands, Stu. I mean, to put that in context, I think you've sold over 40 million energy efficient products in your history. I mean, 40 million. So, you know, you're in the hundreds of thousands and millions, whereas when I talk to others, it's a different mindset.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of advantages there, Mike. And one of the things is, yeah, we've been lucky. We found ourselves in a market that is a high volume market.
Yes.
And we bought the right products to market at the right times.
Yes.
And we've been nimble, mate. I mean, you talk about those risks. I mean, one of the philosophies I've had, which is a pretty simple one, is when the party's on, drink big. And when the party's over, sometimes the hangover's worth having.
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as you can manage that risk to a certain extent, but still be eager enough to take the risks. And as long as you're still working within the core strengths of your business, which is what we do.
Yes.
Then I think we really do set ourselves up for success. But like I said earlier, we've been in the chair for a while now. So we're in a position where when the new opportunities pop up, we can dive into them aggressively.
Yeah.
You know, we're always seeking new opportunities. We're currently modeling and launching into the UK.
Yes.
Into a brand new market, which is another big test for us.
Yeah. So you've obviously got a strong future. You're clearly born for this, Stuart. You know, you see a strong opportunity pipeline going forward. You're going to carry on doing this for the next 10 years. What are your own plans? I know you've got one of your lads in the business.
I've got two of them in the business now, actually. And they're going very, very well.
Great.
To be honest with you, mate, I love it.
Yeah.
I love getting up every day and I love coming to work. I think in the back of my mind, I'd always like to be on the back of a boat fishing, having a drink and doing nothing, but I'm not too sure how long I could do that. I've got a few friends that have retired and they say you're a long time retired and they get itchy feet and kind of look to come back into corporate world.
Yes.
I don't have any plans on slowing up too much anytime soon. I really enjoy my work. I enjoy the challenges and I enjoy the people that are around us.
Yeah. So look, Stu, let's just go back a little bit. So what was it in your upbringing? Was there any early signs? Were you the kid in the playground who could hustle? And I do like this saying about hustling. Things may come to those who wait, but only those things left behind by those who hustle. You're definitely one of those guys. So mate, tell us about growing up.
Oh, mate, I don't know if I would consider myself a hustler.
What I mean by hustle is someone who takes action, someone who sees an opportunity and then doesn't mess about.
No, well, that probably then describes us. As a kid growing up at school, to be honest with you, Mike, I struggled. Didn't enjoy school. It was a slow pace, you know. Some people just aren't made to be sitting in a classroom and working away in that kind of an environment. It was always a challenge. I wanted to be on the move. I found myself when I got into business through being a chef, an apprentice chef, and then moving into catering. I was running my own business as a fourth-year apprentice and learned a lot about business. And from an academic perspective, I grew in business. You know, I struggled at school mathematically. I never enjoyed school, but now I can sit in a boardroom and completely understand everything that's going on. I feel like I can lead the conversations and really, I only recognized that in myself about 5 or 6 years ago, that my personal progression academically was not until later in life, really, until I actually started to have to put into practice business and understand what I'm doing. That's something I say to my boys. You know, I've got 4 boys that are all fantastic kids and young men, and I keep saying to them, there's a new opportunity every day. That's a matter of identifying those opportunities. Take risks, you know, and do it on the back of confidence. And, you know, if I can build my boys with a high level of self-esteem and a high level of confidence, then the world is your oyster. And so me imparting that kind of wisdom onto those guys is the type of philosophies that I like to try to carry through my own life.
It's a reoccurring theme, this. The more owners and entrepreneurs I meet, the more there's a big category of people that didn't like school. It was too constraining. And they learn practically, right? You know, they don't learn theoretically. Yep. So when you became a chef, right, when would that have been about? Because when I left school in 1980, I'm a bit older than you, it wasn't very cool being a chef. But then about 10 years later, when Jamie Oliver came along, all of a sudden it was the coolest thing, you could bloody be a chef.
Yeah.
So where were you on that continuum?
Mate, like I said, struggling at school, you know, getting into the hospitality and catering was about creativity.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah.
And I worked under some very good chefs. You know, back in the day, there was a magazine called Gourmet Traveller, which was a magazine that used to go around the country rating restaurants. And I worked under a chef there where we were in the top 3 restaurants for 2 or 3 years in a row. So this was a young chef who was really innovative and was bringing new styles of food to the market and basically explored new things. And that really was exciting for me. That guy taught me a lot about taking risks, I suppose, and that was just in food. You know, putting different menus together and different styles of food and bringing it together and throwing it out into the market and saying, who's interested? And then we worked in a restaurant that was hugely successful, which I suppose drove my appetite around exploring new things, Mike.
Yeah. But it's interesting because those skills are so transferable, aren't they? You just mentioned creativity. I mean, what do you do now? You're nothing if you're not creative. You innovate these products. You innovate these ideas. You innovate these concepts. I know you've got a big team offshore in India that help with software development. I mean, it's just another version of that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, Mike. It is. And like I said before, it's about surrounding yourself with the right people. So I do pinch myself and wonder sometimes how we got here. I mean, I know how I got here, but it's like, how did I go from being a chef into being a supplier of products into the energy efficiency markets? A certainly different trajectory to the one that I thought I was going to be taking when I jumped into my first year as an apprentice chef. A lot of those skills really are transferable, Mike. And to be honest with you, most people that I associate with in business are of a similar mindset.
Yes.
And particularly at the moment under this COVID framework, you know, most people I'm talking to that have had success and are of that mindset are doing pretty well, actually. There's real opportunity, I think, around being nimble and really looking at what is coming down the track and de-risking yourself and doing it quickly and proactively and not worrying about not making a decision.
I think we're very lucky living in Australia. You know, it's a free market. As you said, I completely concur. There are opportunities everywhere, Stu. I could wax lyrically from now till 10 o'clock tonight and not be done with the things that I'm seeing around and about me.
Yeah.
But again, I think you're back to self-esteem. I think you're back to nurturing kids, allowing them to think outside of the square a little bit, allowing them to experiment. And then I guess giving them, just like you said, giving them the confidence to think, well, maybe I can have a go at that. I mean, I had no idea that. How I got here, I have no idea, really. All I know is that, you know, I've spent the last 35 years having a go most days and turning up and trying to be useful and constructive and creative. So, look, thanks for sharing your story with us, Stuart. That was really terrific. I've enjoyed it immensely. Just want to wrap up with some questions that we normally do. So who was a big influence on you, Stuart, that you would think back on and say, yeah, you know, that was a great friendship? Who were the biggest influences on you?
My father and mother were both very, very positive people, and they helped me build that high level of self-esteem and confidence, Mike, which was really critical. There was one moment that gave me a lot of confidence, which is a really left-of-field moment. When I had my cafe back in the day, we were changing the cafe constantly, and we were trying new cuisines and just moving things around, and the cafe found its happy place, and all of a sudden the cafe exploded, and this little lady came into me who'd been one of my original customers, And she just came up to me and she grabbed my hand and she said, Stuart, what you've done here is really, really great. And you can do anything you want if you put your mind to it. Now, I think that's a kind of thing your nan would say. Yeah. But this was a lady that had been coming in for years, and there was a little moment there for me. It was like, oh, that just gave me that level of confidence, and it never quite left me. I've got a great family support, and as our business has grown, I've been very, very fortunate to have some great relationships in business. Some of my customers have become some of my closest friends. You know, we've got some very close relationships with people that work for very large energy efficiency companies in Victoria. And between us, we've been able to grow and drive our businesses in a way that's helped guide us all in this new industry, I suppose.
Yes. What a great story that. I mean, it's almost angelic, that old lady coming up to you and telling you that, isn't it, Stu? I mean, I think we need to remind ourselves of the power of words. You know, we can really encourage people, can't we? I mean, we've got to be very careful with what we say sometimes, because we can set people on fire and then we can put them down. I think that's a great story, that you've remembered that. How many years ago is that?
God, 30 years ago. Bit of a grandma thing to say, but at that time it was quite compelling.
Packed with meaning. Great. What about a favourite book or a favourite film?
Don't read. Don't enjoy reading. I read all day, every day, whether it be through current affair, newspapers, email. Reading for me is a chore, Mike.
Okay.
Films? Fair enough. I love my Interstellars. I love my Martian. I love my sci-fi style movies.
Got it.
The movies that allow you to kind of, your mind to explore the possible future opportunities.
Isn't that interesting?
The what ifs.
We're back to creativity. Mate, you're a very creative guy.
I think a lot of us sci-fi nerds can kind of relate to that. It's like, could that actually happen?
Yeah. Yes, isn't that interesting? So what about a favourite place? What's your favourite place?
Well, I've travelled a fair bit, and there's nothing like home. We're a bit of a skiing family, so we really enjoy Whistler. Really love Canada.
Okay.
But really, mate, honestly, there's nothing like home, Sydney.
You'd be amazed how many people tell me that. What do you like doing outside work?
Mate, I love my footy. I love the Seagulls. I live on the northern beaches up here at Manly and get down to watch the Eagles every opportunity we can. I love my golf.
Yes.
I don't mind getting out and having a hit of golf.
What a frustrating game that is.
Mate, once a game. It should be such a simple game. You're hitting a little ball into a little hole. It can't be that hard. But
I do know Scott Penn from the Seagulls. Yeah. He's the chairman, and I'd helped him sell a company a few years ago. And I always wondered why he does that job, because you can never get it right as a chairman of a footy club. You know, everyone's always on it.
No, I don't know. I don't know, Mike, many people that own football clubs that consider them to be a great business.
They're not a business, are they?
I know. No, they're not a great business.
When I used to ring him on a Monday, I'd always check with my lads, how did the Eagles go on the weekend?
Yeah.
Because I'd have to get gemmed up. I'd know what kind of a mood he was going to be.
Yeah, certainly forking out a lot of money for the pleasure. But, you know, thank God that they're there, because without them, we wouldn't have the clubs as strong as they are. So,
well, Stuart, thanks once again for joining us today, albeit online. It's been a great pleasure to hear your story. I know you're going from strength to strength. We wish you all the best there at Emerald Planet, and keep helping us save the planet, Stuart.
Mate, appreciate it. Thanks, Mike.
Take care. All the best. I hope you enjoyed my conversation today with Stuart. I love the way Stuart went from being a chef and running his own catering business to manufacturing, lighting and importing and all the stuff that goes with that. He thought they were very similar, both demanding creativity. Now, if you like these podcasts, be sure to tell your friends and colleagues and get them to subscribe from their favourite platform. No charge. Finally, big shout out to our sponsors, Oasis Partners. For great business advice, guidance and support, call the guys at Oasis, www.oasispartners.com.au. So, until next time, stay safe.